Welcome to the Basic Money Matters Show, where we will discuss tools and tips to help you manage your money. Are you ready to get your finances in order? Well, here's your host, Annette Sullivan, certified public accountant and owner of Temple Management Consulting, to show us how.
The average annual price of attending a full-time undergraduate college program at a four-year institution is about $14,000, and that's at a public institution, $14,000 a year. It is more like $26,000 or $27,000 at a private or nonprofit institution, according to the National Center for Education Statistics. So with that in mind, we need to do all that we can to plan ahead and maximize education savings. We all want to be in a position to be comfortable financially with sending our kids to college. And so in this episode, we are going to discuss other ways that you can save for higher education expenses. And when I say other ways, is we discussed in a previous episode, solely focused on the 529 plan, which is a college savings tool. In this episode, we will discuss all the other ways that you could put away money, vehicles, whether they are savings plans or whatever they may be, and what are some of the implications of using one versus the other. Now, when we talk about savings or buckets of money, generally the buckets of money that we generally deal with are as such, retirement funds. In this case, we're talking about traditional IRAs or Roth IRAs. So that's a bucket of money that you'll likely have now or will have, retirement funds. The second bucket of money is generally just your regular investments, you know, taxable investments, CDs, mutual funds, stocks, things of that nature. So you'll have investments. The third bucket of money pretty much relates to specifically the children, your children. And that would be a 529 plan and or a Coverdale education savings account. And a third option is generally another type of custodial account for your children, and that's a UGMA or UTMA custodial savings account. So if we break that down, there are generally like five opportunities if you wanted to have different ways to plan for and fund your children's education. You have the 529 opportunity. You have the Coverdale Education Savings Account opportunity. You have potentially a uniform minor. It's basically a minor custodial account. The fourth, as discussed, are just your regular taxable investments. And then the fifth is your traditional IRA or your Roth IRA. The reason I break that down is as we think about the buckets of monies that ideally that we would have, you know, obviously the savings accounts relating to children going to college does not necessarily apply to everyone. If you don't have children, then you wouldn't have any of those three. Okay, unless, of course, you are funding for another family member. So the point is, let's talk about each one of those, and let's talk about some of the benefits and maybe some of the disadvantages or things to watch out for, either from a tax perspective, contribution perspective, whatever it may be, so that you have some basic information that maybe that may help you in planning for higher education expenses. So we talked about the 529 plan in another episode. In this one, the Coverdale Education Savings Account, it's basically a trust or custodial account that is set up to pay qualified education expenses for whomever you're designating as the beneficiary. Now, this account can use not only just for higher education or college expenses, but also it could be used for elementary and secondary education expenses. Now, there are certain requirements to set up a Coverdale Education Savings Account. So when the account is established, the designated beneficiary must be under the age of 18 or be a special needs beneficiary. Number two, the Coverdale Education Savings Account must be designated as a Coverdale Education Savings when it is created, because once again, it's a custodial type of account. And obviously the document creating and governing the account must be in writing, and it must meet certain requirements. So let's talk about contributions to a Coverdale Education Savings Account. And actually, before we talk about contributions, where can you open it? You can open up a Coverdale Education Savings Account at a bank or a brokerage account. Now, you can make contributions to this account to finance the beneficiary's qualified education expenses. Those contributions must be made in cash, and they are not deductible. In fact, for those, there is an income limit, which means if your adjusted gross income exceeds a certain amount, then you would not be able to utilize the Coverdale Education Savings Account. The income limit, the adjusted gross income limit, is in the range of $95,000 to $110,000 for single taxpayers and $190,000 to $220,000 for married filing joint taxpayers. If your adjusted gross income exceeds around those amounts, and those are 2018 numbers, then this account is not available for you to use. Well, this account is not available for you to use in your name. However, all is not lost. There is still an opportunity, and we will discuss that momentarily. Businesses and trusts can contribute to the Coverdale Savings Account that you set up without an adjusted gross income limit. So that's an opportunity as well. There is no limit to the number of accounts that can be set up for a particular beneficiary. So you have one child, you can set up more than one account. However, the total contribution to all of the accounts on behalf of that one beneficiary cannot exceed $2,000 in any year. So you may open up two or three accounts, but the maximum amount that you can contribute for the year for that one beneficiary is $2,000. So let's talk about distributions, pulling money out of it. So that beneficiary can receive tax-free distributions. When we say distributions, basically pulling money out of it, tax-free, to pay qualified education expenses. And those are spelled out in the IRS guidelines. But the distributions are tax-free as long as they don't exceed the qualified education expenses. So let's talk about that. So if you pull out $15,000 for the beneficiary to use for qualified education expenses, but those qualified education expenses only come to $12,000 in that year, then you've pulled out an additional or an excess of three. Then a portion of the earnings on that three is taxable to the beneficiary. So the point is, be careful. Please understand what the qualified education expenses are for the year. And of course, cap your distribution at that amount so that there would not be an adverse impact. So also with the Coverdell Education Savings Account, investments. When we talked about investments for 529 plans, we discussed that you're somewhat limited. Whatever investments are available within that plan is all you can use. You are not, you don't have a lot of flexibility. Well, with the Coverdell Education Savings Account, you have far more options in terms of investments. So you can invest in a much wider range of securities, as they this account is not restricted to investing in a given state's plan. So keep in mind that your investment options are more varied with a Coverdell as opposed to a 529. However, the amount that you can contribute to a 529 is much greater than the Coverdell Education Savings Account. Coverdell Education Savings Accounts receive the same tax deferred and tax free growth benefits that 529 plans do. Of course, this is assuming that all the funds that are distributed are spent on qualified education expenses. But keep in mind, state income tax deductions are not available for contributions that are made to these plans. So they are not as tax efficient as 529 plans. Financial aid impact. Coverdell Education Savings Accounts receive the same financial aid treatment as 529 savings plans. CESAs, or Coverdell Education Savings Accounts, that are owned by you, the parent, or the student, are considered parent assets. And therefore, because they are considered parent assets, they are looked at more favorably and assessed at a more favorable rate when the financial aid folks are determining financial aid for you. When we say more favorable rates, meaning it won't negatively affect your financial aid as much as some other type of account would. So in summary, when we compare a 529 plan to a Coverdell Education Savings Plan, there's essentially three distinguishing factors. And that is the amount that you can contribute. With a 529 plan, actually, you can contribute up to $15,000 if you're single before having gift tax paperwork and potential implications, or $30,000 if you're married filing jointly. So you can contribute far more to a 529 than you can to a Coverdell. The second distinguishing feature between the two is the Coverdell, as we discussed before, has an adjusted gross income limit. It is not available to everyone. If you make over a certain amount, you're not able to use the Coverdell. There is no income threshold for the 529 plan. But we have a caveat here. A grandparent can contribute to a Coverdell Education Savings account that you have set up if you exceed the AGI. Okay. If they fall below the AGI, then grandparents or other relatives can make those contributions. So essentially, the Coverdell Education Savings Account can still be used. There is a workaround. And finally, the third distinguishing feature between the two we discussed is that you have far more investment options with a Coverdell savings than you do with a 529, typically. So that's pretty much it for the Coverdell Education Savings Account. So now you have some information on 529 plan and also on Coverdell Education Savings Account. So let's say for some reason you don't want to open up either one of those things, or you have some other buckets of money and we discuss what they are. So let's say you have a traditional or a Roth IRA. And as we know that those are savings vehicles for retirement and that will allow you to save on a tax deferred and tax free basis. Now, when we think of a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA, now we are not talking about an employer-sponsored 401k. We're talking about a traditional or Roth IRA that you have opened up yourself at a bank or brokerage. Typically, we are setting that up for our retirement, correct? However, that is how you should be thinking of a traditional or Roth IRA, or IRA, but they can still be used if planned properly. They can be used for qualified higher education expenses. As you know, when you have an IRA that you've opened up at a brokerage firm or a bank or what have you, you have much investment flexibility, okay? Far more than either of the two. There are contribution limits to your traditional IRAs each year. However, there are no income limitations that restrict you from making a non-deductible IRA contribution or a deductible contribution. Okay. Let's talk about tax efficiency. The traditional and the Roth IRA offers very good tax advantages. The best thing about these accounts is that when you pull money out, distributions, and you pull it out to pay for qualified higher education expenses, you get to avoid the 10% early withdrawal penalty. Now, this is just for the traditional IRA and the Roth IRA. This penalty exclusion is not available if you use your employer-sponsored 401k and pull money out of that for higher education expenses. So there is a difference. 401k would have a 10% penalty if you used it for higher education. A traditional IRA and a Roth IRA would not. Financial aid impacts. When it comes to a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA. So these two are not counted as what we call accessible assets for financial aid purposes. Withdrawals of principal and earnings will count as income for financial aid purposes. So you've got to be very strategic in the timing of your distributions if you're going to be using these funds to make sure that these distributions don't materially impact your child's financial aid eligibility. Okay? So when you withdraw funds from the traditional IRA or the Roth IRA for purposes of using it, then it is counted as income for financial aid purposes. Okay? So it could have an impact that you may not like. So you have to be very strategic with that. The third bucket of funds that you may consider is uniform transfers to minors, or UTMA, uniform gifts to minors account. They are both custodial savings accounts that are often set up for minor children. A custodial savings account such as these will be set up under either a UTMA or UGMA rules, depending on the state of residence, where you reside, where the minor resides. So if you're in a state that deals with a UTMA, that's what it would be. If you're in a state that deals with a UGMA, that's what it would be. UTMAs and UGMAs are set up, once again, at a bank or a brokerage, but they are not as flexible as a Coverdell education savings account or as flexible as 529 plans. One way is that once you name a beneficiary of these custodial accounts, they cannot be changed after the accounts have been created and funded. Okay? Whereas with a 529 plan and with a Coverdell education savings account, if your child ends up getting scholarships, financial aid, monies from elsewhere, and they don't end up needing the funds in either one of those two accounts, you could still use the accounts by designating another beneficiary who's a member of the family, which is a broad term for the IRS. Depending on whether the UTMA or UGMA whether it's a UTMA or UGMA, and the state will dictate when your minor will take control of the funds. Financial aid impacts of a UTMA or UGMA. They receive the worst treatment from a financial aid efficiency standpoint because these accounts are considered the student's assets, and student assets are assessed less favorably or at a higher rate than parent assets in the financial aid formula. So keep that in mind. Finally, the last bucket of funds that you would have could be, you could have some CDs, just general investments in stock, mutual funds, EFTs, or whatever they are. Taxable investment accounts, though, all those things that we named, they are among the most flexible and easy to set up and easy to use savings vehicles. Okay. And they can be used for college funding, obviously. From an investment standpoint, very flexible. You can invest in whatever you'd like with regular taxable investment accounts. ETFs, mutual funds, stocks, bonds, CDs. And of course, you don't have any adjusted gross income limitations. But there are no major tax benefits afforded to taxable investment accounts if you're going to use that to contribute to your beneficiaries' higher education expenses. So there's no tax benefits like the 529 and Coverdale education savings. Financial aid impact. Taxable investment accounts, your CDs, your mutual funds, your brokerage accounts, etc., they will be considered assets of either the parent or the student, depending on who actually owns the account. So if the account is owned by the student, it's going to be just like the UTMA and UGMA. It will be assessed less favorably than if it was owned by the parents. So in summary, that's a lot to take in. But if you sift through it all, there are a number of options, planning options, for saving for higher education expenses. We talked about the five groupings. At the top of the list always is a 529 plan. No income limits. You can contribute a pretty significant amount each year. There are many tax advantages to it. And so if you did nothing else, that is one that you should highly consider opening up and utilizing for your child or beneficiary's higher education expenses. So I hope this information has been helpful to you today, that you've gleaned some things here. And I appreciate you listening to Basic Money Matters, where we take the complicated financial parts of your life and business and make it easy for you to understand. You can also hear our episodes on Hindsight Media Radio Network 103.5. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining us for the Basic Money Matters Show. Please visit our website at templemanagementconsulting.com. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Basic Money Matters. Thanks again for joining us.